Here we are in Torquay Books on Love Your Bookshop Day, and we're very fortunate today to have Eliza Henry-Jones with us, who's known, I'm sure, to many of you, her writing, particularly her most recent book, Ache, which I've just finished reading and enjoyed very much. But of course, your debut novel, Eliza, was In the Quiet, was published in 2015. It was shortlisted for a number of awards for the Readings Prize for New Australian Fiction and the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards. Yep. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And longlisted also on a couple of other awards. And I understand you've already signed an additional two-book deal for young adult novels.
Yeah, so I've got one more adult book contracted, which I've been busily trying to write, and then I've got two more sort of children's YA. One of them's definitely young adult, and the other one might be children's or might be YA. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Yeah. And your most recent book, Ache, of course, I sort of felt it would have a bit of a connection with many people in this area, because it's sort of set in the background of bushfire, the effects of bushfires. And of course, we've had the fairly recent Wye River bushfires here, and I'm sure a lot of people are very aware of, you know, just the effect, the long-term effect of something like that. I'm very interested in how books start, and I'm just wondering if you could sort of give us an idea of what was sort of the very germ, the very sort of beginning spark of Ache. How did you come to start that book?
Well, it was actually a story that I'd been sort of been mulling in the back of my head for years and years and years. A lot of my family members went through Ash Wednesday, and my auntie, who this book's dedicated to, was actually one of the first people to go up there and sort of dealt with a lot of the animals that were injured. So it was sort of sitting there in the back of my head, and then I went to a trauma conference at the MCG, and there was this woman giving a presentation on transgenerational bushfire trauma, and she'd done a lot of counselling in Black Saturday and Ash Wednesday, and she was still working with the communities 30 years after, and it sort of really crystallised for me that this was actually something I really wanted to write about, and I immediately sort of headed out and I tried to find books that explored bushfires, and I couldn't really find any, so I enrolled in a honours year to look at bushfire representations in fiction, and I sort of found that most of the, you know, stories that had bushfires in them were either for children or young adults, and of the adult ones that did explore it, they tended to be quite peripheral, like it was sort of this thing that the characters went through, but it wasn't, the story didn't revolve around it, and I thought that was quite interesting given how big a place it has in this sort of, you know, Australian identity. Mm-hmm. And it's on most people's radars, I'd say. Yeah. Well, everyone's.
Yeah. But this honours degree must have then discovered some bushfire fiction. What sort of books are there specifically? Are they mostly just peripheral, like you say?
Mostly okay. Peripheral. There's very few that explore it as a central plot. And yeah, quite a lot of YA. And some of the research that has sort of looked at, you know, the sort of stories that explore bushfires sort of said that bushfires sort of lend themselves to YA because there is this sort of sensationalist, and it's very visual, and yeah, which I thought was quite interesting.
And I understand that you've actually trained as a grief and trauma counsellor, so of course that would, you know, really feed into this sort of story where people are suffering that sort of long-term grief. But I did sort of wonder, the fact that you have that sort of counselling, could that actually get in the way of creating this sort of creative story, fiction story? Imagine that you could be sort of very much locked into the rules of grief training, and then it gets in the way of a story developing. So was it a benefit or not?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway I've gotten from all the training and work I've done is that there are no rules, and that trauma and grief is so individual, and that, you know, the more we can sort of write about it and explore it in different ways, the better. And I think as well, it sort of it actually complements the writing process really well, because it sort of teaches you to look at things in a certain way and to listen and to think about what people say and the stories they're telling themselves, and also that might not be the truth, and how those stories can shift over time and things like that.
So it wasn't really something that got in the way of...
No, I think it enhanced it, okay. And it really, yeah. It grew me up quite a lot. So yeah. I worked for quite a few years in the drug and alcohol sector. So I case managed families where the parents had substance abuse issues, and I was also running therapy groups for the children using horses. So that was my job. And particularly because I do tend to put a lot of horses in my story.
So I was going to ask you about that later, yes, the horse connection.
Yeah, I think particularly running the therapy groups and being able to witness the way that horses help these kids to communicate and come up with their stories and make them feel safe and give them something to trust. Like it really, it was a really profound thing to be able to witness and then to be able to sort of, in a very different way, write about.
Yeah. I'd just like to pursue though that sort of question of, you know, whether the technical sort of training in grief trauma, how that affected the fiction writing, because you do say in the book this is a work of fiction, but we all say, you know, it's a work of fiction. And you did talk to a lot of people who'd been through grief and trauma attached to bushfires. How did those stories impinge on your writing? Did they sort of feed into it, I guess, as background, or did you sort of pick on particular stories as being more important? How did that work?
I actually decided early on, because my instinct was to seek out formal interviews with people and just hear as many stories as I possibly could, but then I thought that actually could blur it, and I didn't want people picking up this book and expecting to see their stories or expecting to see their stories in a certain way. And so what I actually ended up speaking to a lot of people, it was all informal. A lot of my family, a lot of friends, a lot of people I'd mentioned I was working on this and that, you know, tell me things. And I also spoke to a lot of professionals, a lot of firefighters, a lot of people that had worked in the aftermath of Black Saturday, that sort of thing. So that's sort of how I overcame that, because I was concerned about blurring it if I did put too much emphasis on that.
Yes, so it must have been a bit of a fine balance sort of between the two.
Because I wanted to do justice to it, but I wanted it to be a story.
Yes, yeah. And of course, the thing that sort of really I noticed in this particularly, of course, is that you focus on four generations of women, particularly. That's sort of the spine or the structure of the story, I guess, isn't it, really? And so there's Annie, who I presume is sort of the main character.
Yeah.
And then there's her daughter Pip, her mother Susan, and then her grandmother Gladys, who sort of has died before the story actually, you know, starts. And just, why did you want to focus on the four generations of women? What was it that sort of created your interest there?
Well, I grew up with my mother and grandmother, and my grandmother had Alzheimer's that got very, very bad, and she was psychotic a lot of the time, she was violent, and it was a very strange dynamic, and we'd often sort of be pitted against each other like siblings, and it's a dynamic that I'm very conscious of and I think a lot about and I explore quite a lot in my writing. And so I think for me it was a little bit of wish fulfillment, because the relationship that Pip, who's six, has with Susan, her grandmother, is probably a relationship I really would have liked to have had with my grandmother. And I think Gladys is probably my favourite character out of those four generations, and yeah, I sort of knocked her off before the story
started.
Yeah,
she's just a bunch of a guy.
But yeah, so it is something, and it is familiar to me, that idea of like this house of women. And yeah, it's something I find very fascinating.
So Annie is really the main character, but she's not a very easy character to deal with, is she?
No.
Why did you choose her?
She's probably my least favourite character, actually.
Yeah, she's quite irritating.
Yeah, she is. And I think I wanted to write, you know, I wanted her to be flawed, I wanted her to be imperfect, I wanted her to be frustrating, because I think when people go through that sort of thing, you know, they are flawed and they are frustrating, and I wanted her to be a real character. And I think, I mean, writing her, I did find her very annoying, and I probably connected with her,
really?
Yeah, the least out of the other characters, but I think there was some point I felt connected to her anyway, and there was something there that I warmed to, despite how frustrating she was. And I think that, you know, she does become less annoying as the story goes on.
Yeah, she learns, doesn't she, as she goes on. So this is very much a rural story, and your, you know, first novel, In the Quiet, was very much a rural story. So do you think that fiction sort of moving out of the city into the country was sort of building a rural or a regional sort of fiction in Australian writing?
Well, I just love it. So I think I started writing you know, I started writing when I was really little, and I always put or set my stories in the country because I'm obsessed with the country. I love the bush, I love the forest, I love the ocean, and I think initially it was a bit of escapism for me because I was living in the suburbs, and then as I've sort of like incrementally clawed my way out, it's just sort of this, I don't know, it's just, I'm just passionate about it. And
maybe it's time to hear those regional stories that are all out there.
Absolutely.
I just wonder if anybody else has questions. There's a chance to ask questions if you wanted to. I've still got a few more.
Can I ask a question? Can we hear a little bit about your writing process? Like, from the, you know, whatever, however you want to answer that. But, like, how do you turn ideas? Do you structure your whole book, or do you just work out of order, in order? I'm
really
interested in that
thing. Yeah, so am I. I'm a bit sad, actually. I think if you're a writer, you're either a pantser or a plotter. So you're the fly by the seat of your pants, or you plot everything really carefully. I'm 100% pantser. I sit down. I don't write every day. I might have 2 or 3 weeks where I don't really work on my novels at all. But when I do work on them, it'll be really intensive. So I might sit down and write 16,000 words. I write a lot. I write prolifically, but I might get to the end of an 80,000 word, you know, draft and go, I don't like this at all, pull out 2,000 words and start it again. So I write very quickly, but most of it's crap. So whereas I know a lot of other writers, you know, they'll every sentence they'll agonize over, and they might write 100 words in a day, but it'll be perfect and that'll almost be what ends up in the book. So it's,
do you work from character first, or place, or what comes first for you? Like, place is obviously really important, but are the characters sort of, do they come through and tell you the story, or do you have an idea of the story before you've had the voice of the character?
That's a good question.
Sorry if you can't.
No, I think it's probably a mix of place and story, and then the characters come. Can I ask you, because I love your writing so much.
Same as place and then character.
Mm.
Story, I have no idea. Until the end. Until I finish writing. But place is a strong, maybe it's the main character, and I feel like it is with you as well. Place is the character.
So I feel like the places in your novels are just, they're haunting. Like, they just stay with you like the characters do. It's just beautiful.
No, I feel the same. But, yeah, place is definitely important, I think.
Well, I think place is very much in this story too. Is a character, like you say?
Absolutely, yeah, one of
it's
the
very
main
strong.
Characters.
Yeah, yeah. You get a very great sense of place,
and it can give all the mood and feeling without having to write.
Absolutely,
it's there in the place.
Mm.
And I wondered, with, you know, just it's a story about family dynamics, really. So I wondered, if there hadn't been any bushfires, would this family have been so troubled and, you know, a little bit at war with each other like this? I mean, you're sort of exploring family dynamics, and the fires sort of seem to give a reason for that. But would they have been like that anyway, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like in this case the bushfires sort of exacerbated everything, and it exaggerated it, and it sort of, everything sort of came to a head probably more emphatically than it would have otherwise. But I think those issues that they had with each other, and the reactions that they had, and the conflict that was there, would have happened anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to ask about the horses, because horses are a big, I wouldn't say a character, but certainly very much part of the story. I was interested that you mentioned one of your favourite novelists is Gillian Mears, and she's got quite a horse connection in her stories too, hasn't she?
Yep.
So what's with the horses?
Okay, to give you a bit of background, I used to cry when I saw horses in paddocks. It could have been a cow, it was that far away, but I would just be sitting in the back seat of my mother's car just quietly sobbing that I, you know, there was a horse nearby. And I think for me, horses have always been something very soothing for me, and I think I would have been very, very, very naughty as a teenager if I haven't had the horses to occupy me. And even now, like, they're such a big part of my emotional world. So I've got like 2.5 horses. And they're naughty. And Jane, there, she goes to riding club with me. So they're this massive part of my emotional world. And I think my emotions are very much entwined with horses. Mm. And it seems very natural to write about horses when I'm writing about emotions. And I think particularly doing the work with the equine assisted therapy groups, and watching the role that horses had in these, you know, children sort of I don't like using the word recovery, but their journeys really, I think, consolidated the fact that I wanted to write about horses, and that there's just a really special connection that they have with people, I think.
Well, I believe there's a, I don't know the name of it, but there's a horse therapy place around Torquay that people go to too.
Yeah.
And I know somebody has been to it and found it incredibly helpful. Is this, in the end, sort of a story about belonging too? Is it sort of a craving for belonging somewhere from the characters?
In my head, I had someone, Rushdie, sort of talks about imagined homeland, and once you leave a place, you know, you sort of hold this idea of how it was with you, and then you can't ever go back there because it's changed, you know, in the time you've been away. So I sort of, even though it's different, you know, she hasn't moved countries or, you know, crossed the globe or anything, but she sort of has moved down to the city, and she's got this really almost idealized concept of the mountain where she's grown up, and it's quite, she sort of romanticizes it, and she misses the forest and she misses the mountain, and you know, she can't, and it's sort of exacerbated because, you know, the fire's changed it so horrendously, and the community's shifted quite a lot as well, and it isn't a place that you can go back to. And I think it is about her finding that sense of belonging in this community, in this landscape that's so altered.
Okay, any other questions? Just probably a couple of last questions then. I notice you mentioned one of your interviews about the books that have influenced you, and I'm interested that Tim Winton was one writer that has actually influenced you. What way did his writing affect you? Cloud Street, I think you mentioned.
Yes, I love Cloud Street. I love Cloud Street. I'm too scared to reread it in case I love it less than I did. Okay. But I think for me it was just the way he incorporated magical realism and how living and breathing everything in that story was, and how there were bits of narrative in there that were just so beautiful. You just reread whole lines over and over again because it was just, you couldn't have been put in a better way.
And sort of perhaps connected with that, then you also mentioned Dorothy Porter's Monkey Mask, which is a verse novel, so that's very much about the connection between prose and poetry.
Absolutely.
I find, you know, there's quite a poetic sort of how do you write that sort of poetic prose without, and making it sort of work? I mean, yours is not a verse novel, of course, but it's quite a poetic style. So how do you sort of marry those two, the prose and the poetry, in your style?
I'm glad to hear that I have.
Well, I thought you had, yeah. Wasn't surprised to hear that, you know, Dorothy Porter's prose, a verse novel, had affected you in that way.
Yeah, because it was one of the books I had to read for uni, and I was a bit terrified of it because it's the length of a novella, and it's written entirely in verse, so it's poetry, and I was thinking, oh gosh, this is going to be a slog, I'm not going to know what's going on, it's going to be, and I was dreading it, and I picked it up, and it actually had the depth and the complexity that when I'd finished reading it, it was like I just read a novel, and I thought, she's just picked those words so carefully, she only needs like a fraction of them. So I sort of have that in my mind. Not that I think I'd ever be capable of something as artful as that, but just this idea that we can pick the words quite carefully and they can, you know, perhaps communicate more than what a paragraph could if we're careful. But at the same time, I write like, you know, I write so prolifically, it's, I have that in my head.
So perhaps there's sort of a rhyme, it's not a rhythm, well, there's a rhythm rather than a rhyme in the way you write, yeah.
Nice to hear, thank you.
That's all right. Maybe that's the best note to finish on. Thank you very much, Eliza, for coming.
Thank you.